This is Context Free.
You can always talk about
I'm
saying you can always talk about, you know, the horrors of social media. Like I said, I should just you know, delete the apps as podcast performance art.
Put them back on.
No, if I deleted them, I would just delete them.
You delete them forever?
Not forever.
What do you use? Do you use Twitter?
Facebook and Twitter are the twin evils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Facebook's horrible.
Well, Facebook is actually, it's not even interesting anymore.
No, it's just ADHD tools.
I think Twitter is the ADHD tool, actually.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Twitter is way worse. Because Twitter is, there's all these 50 things, and then by the time I get to the bottom, I can scroll back to the top, and there's 50 more things.
Yeah.
So that's, that's like,
well, yeah.
So I never need to pay attention to anything ever again.
The bytes are really small. It's like Reddit, right? Like, where it's just like, oh, it's a GIF.
And it's just constantly there. Whereas I think Facebook has gotten really boring since the election. No, it has.
Isn't that good? Isn't that better?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, yesterday I performed kind of an experiment. I mean, I would say I don't think it was intentional when I started, but by the end of the day, it was intentional. I posted three things yesterday, right? I posted a funny video, I posted a picture of my daughter, and I posted an article about the genetic bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And part of it was, you know, a lot of people posted that video of the Korean expert guy and the kids come into the, like, six people on my feed at least posted that video.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess I'd be happy to talk about
Working from home.
No. No, the cultural backlash of people that felt the need to criticize every aspect of that family.
Right. Well, he's obviously a bad person because he didn't react and hug his child when she ran into the room. So that was the first thing, and I was like, wow, you people are just mean.
Like, right. I was like, I just think it's a funny video, but
I mean,
the way that baby comes in and a little,
oh no, kids are hilarious.
The kids are hilarious.
It's just
very funny.
It's a little heartbreaking to him that, you know, his career is like taking either a nosedive or he's gonna make money from going on, you know, late night or something.
And he became a meme just because his kids came in. Because
they're dancing though, they're really happy.
But they're cute,
they were
kids.
Super happy,
right?
They were, I mean, like, really, and his face just falls. But I think it's interesting.
But then everybody also talks about the mom, right? Like the,
oh yeah.
I mean, then all about aspects of that, and then the backlash of people of like, oh, you thought it was a nanny, you're a terrible person. I mean, I assumed it was the mom. I didn't really,
yeah. I mean,
think about it, but it just wasn't something I thought about. I mean, to me, it was hilarious just the way that she ran in there like a cartoon character.
Oh,
she almost
no.
like slid across the floor.
Jeez.
It was really funny.
Yes.
But my original point was, I posted three things, right? Kind of a,
as a test? As a, like,
it became a test.
Okay.
It became a test by the end, right?
Who's going to like what?
Exactly.
How many likes am I going
to
get?
Not how many likes am I going to get, but it was interesting to me of like, okay, maybe I'll just post pictures of my kids or I just won't even bother with this anymore, right? Because anything that's not just happy, happy, happy.
Right.
I think everyone's exhausted.
Yeah. And that's not what Facebook is for, right? Like, Facebook is.
That's a ridiculous statement.
Well, in the way that most people use it, right? So there are people that, like, oh, they're a cancer patient and they're part of their cancer patient community on Facebook, right? But I think the way most people use it is like a way to get little oxytocin injections, right? And like, oh, happy thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, it's a picture of a kid or of a
right.
cat or
sure.
whatever. Or the opposite kind of oxytocin from group-based outrage, right? Look mm-hmm. at those dirty Republicrats or whichever one. Like, mm-hmm. and And
Demoplicans?
Demoplicans?
I like that.
I can't say that
one. That's hard. I was trying to figure out what that would be. Anyway.
Demoplicans. It's like a dinosaur, and it's so accurate. I'm going to steal that from now on. That's my new thing.
Demoplicans?
Yeah. I can't even say D-E-M-O.
It's certainly better than Republicrat.
U-P-R-I.
I mean, Republicrat's better. But.
No, Republicats, that's a thing. That's a thing people say, but Demoplicans.
Demoplicans.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. You were saying that you were trying to say that Facebook is for a particular thing, which I reject out of hand.
Yeah, no, I mean it's obviously it's in context. I think for the average person, it's a place to go, kind of waste time and get these weird kind of pseudo friendship
okay,
oxytocin
you know what?
Things.
Then I'm done with it.
You're deleting it.
I'm deleting it.
You're
I'm
deleting.
I'm done with it.
It's
Here
not
go.
The only use.
No, we're done. We're done.
Did you delete Uber too? Are you part
here,
of that club?
Deleting this app will also delete its data. It
oh,
will
yeah.
also delete
oh,
all
no.
of the people you know. Here you go.
All the people you know?
Delete
is that
it.
What it says?
There, I just deleted Twitter too.
Oh, God.
They're
Do you
gone.
Feel better?
Yeah.
All right, so what is the date today? What is it? It's the 11th.
Sure.
3/11.
Is it the 11th?
Uh-huh. I'm okay. just going to write that down.
Gone.
You get pulled in. You get pulled. Do you feel better?
Probably will.
If you read a book every time you think about...
That's what I did.
Facebook.
That's what I did all day.
Yeah,
I read a whole book this morning, and then I read half of another book.
So you read the?
I mean, they were short
on,
books.
It's on. It's
Let's
on.
Be honest. Okay. These were easy to read books.
It's Encyclopedia Brown, Hardy Boys.
As we've said before, as we've noted before, I'm a slow reader.
I don't know. So you read? Was it On Tyranny?
On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder.
Okay, and you really enjoyed it.
I
or
did.
You found lots of...
I wanted to buy 10 copies of it and give it to everyone I know.
Wow. Okay.
Because I only know 10 people.
You'd only know...
Now that I'm not on Facebook, I only know 10 people.
That's good. I'm glad we've reduced your scope of interest down to the people that really matter.
Well, it'll probably... If I don't spend time on that garbage, it'll probably force me to actually do other things, which
yeah.
is good.
We're going to revisit at some point.
We're going to revisit?
No, I have a date. I have it written down.
Well, I can still get to it from my computer, my work
oh,
computer.
I
mean, I can't delete it from there unless I put in some sort of like...
You could. You could put in a DNS block.
Thing or something
you
like
just
that.
Go
well, I can't put a DNS block because then Stacey couldn't get to it.
No.
That would probably be okay, too. She'd probably be happier, too. No, she likes pictures and stuff.
No, it's... Yeah, it's kind of gross. The Facebook is kind of gross in a lot of ways because you sent me a quote from that On Tyranny book, and it was basically are you going to look it up?
I am. I didn't delete my messages. So
you
still
have
that
app?
That's
an app that's...
I still have that.
I'm not sure. I think you can delete it now.
I don't want
on
to.
On the iPhone.
The quote was, and it was funny because this quote was actually in parentheses in the book, and so I don't have it in context of what it was in parentheses after.
Okay.
So the quote itself was...
An out-of-context quote.
Yeah, exactly. Right, because the whole chapter was about screens versus, you know, getting your news from screens, video, and
right.
and versus books, and also kind of doing your part to not continue to spread unresearched, fake, reactionary trash.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, the quote was... quote, and yes, there is a conspiracy that you can find online. It is the one to keep you online looking for conspiracies. And that rang very true for me because
I
feel like that's what I've been doing.
That's what Facebook is. That's how they make money. Maybe not looking for conspiracies, but they're like Facebook and Google, their objective is to keep you online looking at Facebook and or Google, right? Like,
right.
That's how they make money and that's their entire business model. And when you're doing something unhealthy, right, for you mm-hmm. or for the world, it doesn't affect their bottom line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're doing something unhealthy or you're doing something, you're like researching your, you know, grand novel or your PhD thesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, echoing the darkness that surrounds us.
Well, you're also channeling your rage and your emotions into an empty hole. You're not putting it towards anything that's in any way productive. It's exactly what those in power want you to do.
Hashtag activism.
Well,
right. So that's, do you know what I mean? Maybe I'm using the term wrong, but like, there are a lot of criticism of people on Twitter that like, oh yeah, I'm going to retweet that hashtag. And you well, you get the feeling, right, that you did something in the world,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to go work at a soup kitchen or donate $50 to something. Or
or just do normal things with people.
Right.
And just keep civil society functioning and not divide it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there was another, I mean, I don't want to give this whole book away to you. I feel bad, but, you know, next time when I'm sure you'll read it, we'll talk about it. There's a quote from Václav Havel in there about like, Havel comes up again, about just go and brew beer with other people.
Yeah.
Like that. It's like just those sorts of activities.
The bowling alone.
Not everything has to be a political or charitable thing.
Yeah.
But as long as it's like promoting interaction and you're doing things and you're not, you know, frankly, acting like the president where you just sit there and watch cable news and retweet. I mean, like,
yeah.
Like the thing is don't mirror that which you despise.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you're doing that, I don't think that's helpful.
That was actually going to be one of my original like website names was like civil societies. Like that phrase was, one of the things I bounced around for kind of my original attempts at blogging and that sort of thing. Cause I think it's such a denigrated, not denigrated is the wrong word. It's just a forgotten piece of the puzzle of what it is to be America, right? Like we have all these things that are, we have like, historically we have the government does a lot of things and the church does a lot of things, but there are so many pieces of what it means to, for this piece of civilization or this civilization mm-hmm. that are all civil society, just people banding together and forming bowling leagues or mm-hmm. you know, hacker collectives or artist groups or meetup groups or whatever, right? Like, and I think that is one of the most important pieces of our society that we kind of pretend doesn't exist, right? We don't think.
Well, we've talked about this before, and I've said it. It's because we take the low calorie substitute of the internet.
The low calorie substitute,
right? I mean, the internet is like it's like the no nutrition.
Well, so let's
civil
not...
society, right? I mean, it's like, oh, I made a meetup, or not a meetup. Meetup's a bad example. So you're actually supposed to meet up in person, but I made a forum to talk about this thing.
I'm gonna disagree. Okay. I'm gonna disagree. And because on I guess a number of levels. So
before you disagree, let me just say that I think the internet.
You want to make your point first?
I want to make my point first. That the internet is important for organizing, but not necessarily for executing.
So, okay.
Like that's what I want to say. I didn't want you to react as though I said the internet doesn't have purpose, because it has great purpose, right? I mean, it connects people. It helps them self-organize, you know, without, you know, in a very bottom-up way.
So, I mean, you're basically saying that you're, to oversimplify, you're saying that the internet is often treated like we treated TV in the 80s, right? As a slightly more interactive boob tube, right?
Yeah.
To be a to consume on. And I'm going to disagree when it comes to things like forums and those kind of groups. And not because I think they're kind of innately better than, you know, a physical amateur radio club or mm-hmm. sewing group or quilting bee, or like I'm not contrasting the two in terms of value. I just think there are a lot of people that don't have the ability to participate physically in a lot of things, right? And I think there's a book by Dana Boyd that I actually wrote a post about a long time ago. But Dana Boyd is a researcher who does a lot of work on the internet. And, you know, she has this book, which I'm blanking on the name of, which is really, really good, which is about DANAHBOYD. And it's about, in a lot of ways, how we just denigrate how kids using their, they're on their phone all the time, or they're always on their computer or whatever, right? And as we, as older people, see them as them not socializing, but a lot of the kids, like, that is their only mechanism, right, to kind of meet with their peer group a lot of the time, and to kind of work with them. And so I think it can be, you know, things like forums and interest groups on the internet can be a lot more healthy than that. I just think the majority of what we do is not that, right? Like, and so the majority of what we do are these kind of time wasting, and I know that's a generalization, but time wasting
actions. So give me a good example, or a couple examples of what's the time wasters.
I mean, cat videos.
But I don't watch cat videos. Like,
all right, political content that you agree with fundamentally and don't tell you anything new but make you feel outraged.
So what's a good example of the sort, either left or right? What's the sort of,
oh geez, just
of journalist or author, or like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, I guess I see a lot.
Are we talking about like Hannity and Maddow, like that type of thing?
Yeah, I guess. I don't watch them. Okay. Like, I've seen Hannity once or twice on, right, YouTube, and I yeah.
Because I would say that those are probably the two most mainstream TV personalities that the other side thinks is, you know, out of their mind.
Right.
Right.
Well, but so much of like what I see on Facebook from people that are enraged, right, for whatever reason, is that kind of thing where it's just like social signaling with no value, right? And I think that in a lot of ways is kind of the new version of YouTube, right? Like, so YouTube is a passive way to kind of waste your life away.
Sure.
But, and Reddit, right?
I've never spent any significant time on Reddit.
I almost never do either. I do look at standing cats, something. They're all just cats standing up, and you're not allowed to post anything except for the word cat in the comments. So there'll be a picture of a cat.
Sounds like a waste of time.
The cat's standing up, and there'll be like 200 comments, and each one says cat. Cat.
Okay. Definitely more guilty of the reinforcing political opinion than of that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just, you know, this kind of intellectual masturbation that I think is, anyway, it's
so who are the worthwhile people to read?
You know, I like things like Ben Thompson, Stratechery, the tech strategy guy.
But I guess what I'm saying is you're defending the internet, and I'm not trying to attack the internet. The internet's good, right? I'll defend the internet too.
Why do you hate the internet?
What are the things that you can do on the internet that are better than doing them in real life?
I'm not saying they're better, right? What I'm saying is some people don't have the ability to do them. If you live in if you're not in a city, right? Or you're a young person whose parents won't let you leave your house, or you're a commuter, right? Like, we don't all have the ability, or have infinite time to be able to go physically show up to things like meetups. Like, I think those are better. I think embodied action is better.
Yeah.
But there's a continuum, and forums can be a replacement for that, right? To go meet your friends on a forum or something. I don't think that's innately wrong. I think it frequently becomes toxic, just given the.
But what if that just becomes a reinforcing bubble that, like, you know, there's really no.
No, it shouldn't be the only thing you do in your life, right? Like, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying it's not bad in and of itself, mm-hmm. because it's like saying, you know, someone with a crutch shouldn't have a crutch, right? Like, it's sometimes you need your crutch, right? Because mm-hmm. you can't do something else. So, I just think there's this kind of spectrum of people's ability to participate. You know, mm-hmm. if you live in a rural part of the South, yeah. and you're a science activist or something, you're going to use the internet, right? Like, you're criticizing those people for not going to a meetup is not helpful, right? Because they don't necessarily have them. Mm-hmm. But I agree at your basic premise, right? That a lot of what we do is time wasting, because a lot of the business models are, you know, built on, you know, per click attention or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So they're monetizing your attention, right? That's what advertising is, and trying to keep it sticky to keep your attention on whatever they're trying to monetize, and mm-hmm. and that's for the most part the business model of the internet, because it's all advertising for the most part, mm-hmm. other than pay for play, email, what are they called? Email newsletters.
You pay for email newsletters?
Well, I'm just saying, like, there are pay for play email newsletters.
I don't know, I've heard of any of those.
Yeah, there are. Ben Thompson has one.
That's the one where you're talking about that guy that made all that money.
Yeah.
I didn't put the name together, right?
Yeah, no. Yep. So he,
yep. Now I know what you're talking about.
His fame is probably not that he made all that money, but it is very impressive, right? That a guy that has basically a blog and writes these kind of think pieces on things has to make a phenomenal amount of money. Mm-hmm. But like them and him and New York Times and a number of other sites, you know, they have these kind of gates at mm-hmm. pay for access gates, but that's super rare in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of things. And almost everything is advertising based mm-hmm. or product sales based, right? So it's the fallout of the business model that you get that, right? Like, it's not the internet, it's the fallout of the business model. But
yeah, but we should pay and support the things that we think are quality.
Oh yeah. You should find a way to support them.
We need to find a way to support those things, whatever they are, whether it's journalism or whether it's public radio or whether it's a theater that you want to promote and you want to keep having mm-hmm. theater in your town, or I don't know, there's probably lots of other, those are the sorts of things that I typically contribute to. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of other things out there. But it's like, if you want to have those things, then you have to support them. There's plenty of shows, mostly like, you know, Frontline and things like that, that, I mean, if I had to pay for, I would pay for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I every time I think we talked about this already, so I don't want to go over again, but every time I see like what the cable bill is, I'm just like, I can't even believe this. This is ridiculous. Right. I'm paying for so much nothing.
I just canceled my cable bill.
Did you?
Last weekend. Yeah. So
way to go.
I'm a little terrified because Comcast is pretty, they have some pretty bad behavior that they have done over the years. And so I'm afraid my internet's just going to not stop working someday, since my internet's through the same people that my cable's through.
Right.
So I'm a little nervous that I'm going to be internetless, and then I'm going to be on kind of a month-long internet Sabbath while I wait for it to come back.
You really think that?
By canceling
the TV portion?
No, but I would not put it past them. Well, like, yeah. They
but they have all those ads now that say that they want to fit into your life, not you fit into theirs. They must be.
Well, so
they must be good people.
It was better than a number of the other experiences I've had with them. They actually canceled it, in theory.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't gotten my... I have to wait until next month's bill to see if that really happened.
Yeah.
And now, unlike previously... Oh God! I can't believe we're talking about dealing with Comcast.
No.
I need to finish this thought. So historically, you have to physically show up and give them your box, your cable box.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, and it's just one more step on mm-hmm. like decreased friction purchasing and increased friction, you know, canceling, mm-hmm. right? Like, and it's really pernicious.
Yeah.
It's bad. Now you can go to UPS. Like, they have a partnership with UPS. You can go to UPS with put your stuff in a box and say, send this to the local Comcast people. So we will find out if that worked or if I owe Comcast $1,000 for my cable box or something. But but yeah, so now I'm all internet all the time. So I'm part of the problem. But I do purchase my shows, right? Like I purchase my shows through Apple TV and that sort of thing. But those are dramas and that sort of thing, and not the news kind of shows, I think.
Oh, you purchase like episode
yeah.
at a time type thing?
No, I just buy seasons.
So you don't do Amazon Prime or Netflix then?
I do.
Oh, but there's other things that aren't on those.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So give me, what's an example of something that's not on those two that you still have to see? Because I have a big enough backlog
probably,
on those two.
I'm probably going to get it wrong. I'm probably going to mention something that is on them. And,
yeah.
So I bought The Expanse, right?
That's on Amazon.
Which is on Santa Fe.
We just watched the first half of the first episode last night.
The first half of the first season or the first half of the new season?
No. The first half of the first episode.
Oh, okay.
Because I was tired.
The first half of the first episode of the first season.
Correct.
Okay.
Because I've had 3 or 4 different people
yeah.
tell me that I should see this. And Stacey's actually read the first two books. She's very familiar with the whole plot.
Yeah. Like, I don't know the authors, but I know people who know the authors, and they're mm-hmm. really great folks. And mm-hmm. they were part of that New Mexico kind of writing experience. And I've seen them at cons and that sort of thing.
I like the world building just from the get-go, though. I thought that was great.
The books are great.
You've read them?
Yeah, no, I've read all of them.
How many are there?
What, five? Okay. Five or six? And there's a bunch of novellas okay. that do kind of backstories for a lot of the characters in novella form, which I'm not always a big fan of. But they're two authors, but they're writing as James S.A. Corey.
Right. Oh, okay. I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So they're really two guys.
Interesting.
So, but we will let go of The Expanse. So The Expanse is something that I paid for, and I get as episodes come out on TV, I get those episodes, right? Mm-hmm. So
you're current with that.
I'm one episode back.
Okay.
But I'm effectively current.
Yeah.
What I could do is just wait a year, right, to watch the new season and mm-hmm. wait for it to be on Amazon, which I do with a lot of things. Right.
Right. So exactly. I see what you're talking about in terms of being current, right? So the first two seasons or whatever, there's some stuff that's on Amazon for that, but I won't be current. So like with The Americans,
right.
Right. This is season 5 now that just started, and we just DVR that
right.
to be current. Because yeah, but I would pay for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that I buy stuff like that through Apple TV.
I would pay for that.
And partially it's because I just do not want to deal with the Comcast bundling and mm-hmm. I probably spend too much money on it.
No, I'm sure.
If I did the math.
Yeah.
But yeah, I buy movies and that sort of thing that way, and then I don't feel particularly.
We've been getting a lot of movies from the library.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good option.
Yeah. We just go down there, and I mean, there's plenty of things I haven't seen in the last 10 years. So, or just older movies. I mean, we've seen a few things recently. Just
go pick up,
grab it from the library.
Casablanca or something.
Well, we actually have that on DVD. But, no, I forget what it was. But like, I think I told you a few weeks ago, like I was watching with the kids, like watching Buster Keaton, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was great. I mean, we watch current stuff too, but that was a good example of like just something old that I was like, hey, I don't think I've ever seen any Buster Keaton movies. I should watch this. Worked out. I don't know.
Duck Soup with the Marx Brothers.
Marx Brothers, right. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that either. Okay. Yeah. So speaking of things in person, so we went to the show on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Concerts
are fun.
Except for the next morning.
Yeah.
You're always really tired. And it's a long ride home from...
Oh yeah, that's a far. Yeah, we went to a show that's what 45 minutes from our houses.
35 probably. Yeah,
yeah, something like
it's,
that.
It's a ride, yeah, for
yeah.
sure. I mean, it's not as far as going to like the Boulder Theater.
Right.
But it's close.
Yeah.
I mean it's kind of close to that. So we went and saw Japandroids, which was I've seen them a long time ago, like 7 years ago, 8 years ago, I'm not sure how long ago it was. Maybe something like that. Whenever their first album came out, and I saw them as an opening act, like sight unseen. It was one of these things where I just saw them and it was like,
right.
Like, you know,
you're like, oh
yeah, exactly. Like sometimes an opening act just kind of like knocks your socks off. And you're like, okay, well I'm done now. Good.
So now I can go home.
Now I can go home.
I've seen this new band
this
and I've
great.
Learned something new.
But they, you know, they have a very stylistic thing in terms of their records, right? I mean, all of their records are black and white covers. They're all have 8 songs. Like, you know, this, stick to this formula. Their live energy is, you know, unlike a lot of bands, particularly for two guys, right? So it's like one guy playing drums and one guy playing guitar, and you know they're doing this practically every night, and you know the whatever their tour has got 20 dates or something on it, but I mean they've extensively toured at other times where they've went all over Europe and everything, and I imagine you get really tired of doing that energetic shtick.
Well, their cardio is good.
It is definitely good. Yeah, how he manages. But how did you find, I'm curious, because just because I probably go to more shows than you do.
Oh, yeah.
How did you find just sort of the crowd? You were also up above, so we weren't actually standing in the same spot.
Yeah, after the opening band.
After the opening band. So what was your kind of observation on the show? Like, maybe you thought it was just like most other things and whatever, but what was your thoughts on the energy of the show and how, you know, how they played, you know, the music quality or whatever aside?
I thought the crowd progressed in their response to the band over the course of the show.
Okay.
So I think the band was kind of consistently fairly energetic, but I thought the crowd motion went from like, you know, there's a bunch of white people that are kind of swaying back and forth. Mm. And then by the end of the show, like, there was like pseudo mosh pits going on.
Yeah,
right?
Which like, I haven't been at in like 10 years. I was like, what is going on here?
Is this kind of band? Like, people are stage diving. I'm like, really, guys? Okay. Right. All right. Yeah.
I mean, that's gone so out of fashion that they don't even put security guys up there anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for this band.
Well, right. Right. I mean,
but
no, there used to be 3 security guys for pretty much any show.
Yeah.
I mean, if you went and saw, I don't know, Amy Mann. No, I was kidding. Not Amy Mann. But I've never seen Amy Mann.
No.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I thought the crowd energy was kind of interesting as people kind of amped themselves up, which says that they're much younger than I am because
it's
I was crashing by
sure.
By near the end of the night.
I was tired too.
But, you know, that's what happens on a Tuesday night concert. But, no, I thought it was good. I thought it was interesting. It's a good show. And you know, they're not a boring band. Like, so much physicality, right? Especially for two people.
Right.
Where it's kind of hard for them to take breaks. Obviously, they'd have to kind of retune and switch guitars between, you know, different songs from time to time.
Yeah,
I think he broke a string at one point, but
right.
But for the most part, like that was his breather break, right? It's time to retune. Mm-hmm. I whammied this thing out of shape.
And I think you also observed something after the show about I think you mentioned it, just the tempo of certain songs, and like because their last record is, you know, doesn't have quite the same
energy level
as the first two, and you could kind of almost feel that not only is it the new record, right, that nobody knows as well, but it's also kind of, I wouldn't say it's slow because none of their things are really that slow, but is kind of have a lower energy level.
The BPM
was lower, right? But I also appreciated the fact, so the one other point I wanted to bring up about this, I mean, there's not a ton to talk about, but I just wanted to bring up how I liked how he is aware, the guitar player, he's aware of like, this is a song you're going to like. Like, he understands. Like, a lot of people that are in bands or are the front man for a band,
right,
they seem to forget sometimes that they are there to entertain you. And you know, and they're just playing some role. And I think he fully understands the fact that he's there to entertain you. And he's like, and this is going to be, this isn't a quote, but he's basically saying, like, giving you the nudge of, like, this is going to be an entertaining song.
Jump around now, guys.
Jump around now, right? I mean, like, And I think that's fun because you feel like you're part of it. You feel like you're in it together because he's giving you the okay, you can let your hair down, like you can have a good time. Like, I know this is fun. You're here to have a good time. You know, let's just do this and I'm gonna play to what you want. And I think a lot of bands like take themselves too seriously, quite frankly, and they don't they don't understand that they're there to, you know, they're getting your entertainment dollar.
But they're the artists. They're being artists.
Sure. But it's entertainment. Right. And so I really appreciate the honesty of just being like, hey, I'm up here, I'm having a blast, and you know, and you should have a blast now too.
No, I mean they were a great show to see. And I think just talking about physicality and kind of living the embodied life versus the kind of unembodied life. I think that's one of the interesting things about kind of the tech community or nerds in general, right? Is I think a lot of them are unphysical in a lot of ways, right? Like we're kind of trained to sit in front of a glowing screen and sit in one place for a lot of time. And I think there's a lot of value to, you know, being kind of embodied in the world and in a lot of ways, whether it's being, you know, going to a physical meetup and jostling elbows with people, or, mm-hmm. Or whether it's, you know, smashing a tennis ball at someone's head or something. So, or going to a concert and jumping around.
It's
right?
a shared experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a shared experience, which I mean, I think is that's where going back to what we were talking about before is, you know, the internet is not the same type of shared experience. The things that you do there are different. It's a different type of thing. You know, you don't have, most people don't have memories of the times they spent on the internet.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
yeah.
It just doesn't I mean, really stick with you.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's better, right? Like it's
virtual worlds aside, which I've spent plenty of time.
Virtual worlds aside. You remember a lot of World of Warcraft or some
whatever.
Sort of like that time you cut off the gnome's head or something, or
I mean, I don't remember.
Right.
Images, right? I mean,
oh, okay.
When I say there's, you have no memories, I mean, I certainly have some like visual memories of some things. I mean, I probably don't have that many great stories, but there were some shared experiences in those types of worlds. You can have shared experiences.
Right.
It's a different type of experience, but it is possible.
What about VR?
We've talked about VR, I believe. I believe that is called vomit reality.
Vomit reality.
That's vomit
yes.
reality.
It's projection. Projection puke all over.
As far as I'm concerned, that's vomit reality.
I think it's interesting. So I think just that kind of concept of people being embodied, I think, is interesting. But there's something I've been wondering about VR. And, you know, most of the research, I'm going to make a generalization now, but most of the research, I think, does not really say that if you go play a violent video game on your 50-inch TV, that's going to make you violent, right? It might kind of dampen some of your empathy for a period of time, but it doesn't really, like, if it really made you a psychopath that you were like, killing people is great, right? Like, we would have lots of problems.
Well, I mean, but only if you have no other balance in your life, then sure, but that's then it's just a symptom of a problem you already have.
It can be a great rationalization for your letting your psychosis loose, right? Like that's, I'll buy that. I just don't think it's causative for a lot of things.
I don't think so either.
And I think the research shows that your brain recognizes that these are like drawn things on a screen, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why that level of empathy isn't kind of completely destroyed. But what I wonder about VR is that other than like the touch aspects of it, you're seeing things in 3D, right? Like it's no longer a painting on a mm-hmm. wall that just happens to be in motion. It's a curiosity point for me. I wonder if that same kind of empathy really translates or that same result translates to that is a new medium. It's something I've been wondering about.
So is there ever going to be VR? I mean, this might be a bizarre thing, or you might tell me this exists. I don't know. Is there going to be VR for the workplace where you have remote workers that are all remote, but they're coding or whatever, and they're
just walking around.
Does
throwing,
that make any
throwing
sense?
Throwing bits on the wall. I think so.
Like you can all pretend like you're standing around in the lunchroom, like
I hope
chatting about something.
I hope it's not soon.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
But I think so. Like, why wouldn't that be a thing? Now, it may not be successful, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I still think it's not evident that even this new round where we have like a dozen pretty good, you know, VR solutions, like even the PlayStation VR is pretty good for being a $500 thing.
You know what's brilliant about all that VR advertising, even though I have no desire to try it, is that they never show you what these people are seeing, and so they entice you,
right?
Because you're like, ooh, what are they seeing that's so cool? Why does that old guy who looks like he knows nothing about technology, why is he so into it? I should want to be into it too.
Why is his mouth open?
It's very good advertising.
I mean, it's also not possible, right? Like, unless you are watching the advertising through a VR headset, you can't see what they're really seeing. You can see a projection onto a 2D surface.
No, I understand that.
Which is
but
lame.
I understand that, but it's a side effect is also that you're intrigued because it's a mystery.
Or you think they all look like dopes with their mouths open.
I don't think they look like dopes. I'm just waiting for them to
really?
throw up all over the place.
Oh, okay. Well, that I don't think it's going to happen on the commercial. But
probably not.
That would be a bad advertisement. What was that old game where you build roller coasters?
It's a good idea. It's a good idea for an SNL commercial, though.
Oh, yeah. No.
Right?
Yeah.
They should do an SNL commercial where everyone's doing the VR and then they're just...
They should do that.
They're just...
Puke on everything.
Puking into a bucket. Yeah.
Grandma, check this out. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's a reasonable way to make people more, like, to improve the quality of remote workers at some point. I mean, I it's all whether or not it works out, right? Like, I think AR is definitely going to be a thing. I can't imagine AR won't be a thing. It seems like, and I don't know, you can't predict the future, right? Like, we may be...
No, we probably cannot predict the future.
We probably are going to go back to beating...
If we could predict the future, we would not have picked this future.
No, no. We would probably have bought lottery tickets, too. But, oh, the future is so sad. But I think AR is definitely... I think it seems like a good bet. Like, why wouldn't you have AR, right? Like, why wouldn't you? Other than...
Why is it a good bet?
Because I think our ability to apply metadata to various contexts will have a lot of value, right? Reminding you of what somebody's name is that you've met once, right? Reminding you where that pen was that you just had or something, I think.
So you're talking about like Google Glass, like, but successful? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think...
But that idea. That's what you're talking about.
Right. So I mean... But
Terminator.
We were talking about the workplace, though. Like, specifically in the workplace. I think it's hilarious how bad of a social thing Google Glass was, given that we all walk around with HD cameras in our pocket most of the time and are constantly poking them at things. But a lot of it was like, you are like, people have this kind of, you're surveilling me kind of reaction to Google Glass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which you don't to people kind of carrying their phones around, which on one level is completely nonsensical. And on another level, it's their eyes, right? So I have this new kitty cat, right? The old kitty cat tries to intimidate her. And the way he does that, one of the ways he does that is he sits there and he stares at her mm-hmm. with his eyes. And so Google Glass is a way to kind of socially emphasize that you're watching, right?
Like, which is creepy.
Yeah, no, it is. Being stared at is
being
creepy.
Being stared at is creepy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, I just think it's interesting, right? Like, I think, you know, if it was Google belt buckle, right? Like, I don't think people would have the same reaction.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
To the same sort of thing.
Google helmet.
Google, no, it's still on your head. Like, okay. Like a Google elbow pads, right? Like for your jacket, right? It shows okay. you what's behind you or something. Like, but the fact that it's essentially an augmentation of your eyes, which are this highly social piece of your body and are very... They're very important in social intimidation and social
signaling. There'll be contact lenses before long. You won't even know.
Yeah. Well, that's what's scary, right?
It'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, they probably already, yeah, they are. They're coming for you now.
Right.
But yeah, no, but in the work context is different, right? maybe. but I think it just... Having a monitor that is like projected onto the world, right? Instead of staring at a screen, just seems to me like so better for all things. For one thing, it's kind of got an infinite number of pixels because it just scrolls to whatever you're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. For another thing, it allows you to move around and be a physical person and not be a schlarb at a desk,
mm-hmm.
right? And go sit on the couch with your knees crossed or something, right? And mm-hmm. and you know, shuffle Excel spreadsheets or whatever you'll really be doing 10 years from now. So I think AR is a long-term good bet. I think
I'm sure they'll figure it out. I mean, I remember when the internet became a thing when I was in college, and no one could really figure out what to do with it yet, right? I mean, it was like, oh, okay, hey, look, I can go Telnet into this server and play backgammon and ASCII.
Right.
Like, that's great.
Or you can send ASCII porn to people. Right,
I mean, like, that's great that I can do that, but that's not a reason to have the thing.
Right.
I mean, that's just like that's just like doing a pony trick. Like, you did a trick. I mean, awesome, right? But it's not something that's a sustainable thing that you're going to get mainstream people to adopt like crazy, right? I mean, then they figure out, oh, okay, well, we'll get this browser and we can get pictures embedded in here and,
yeah,
you know, and then we can get rid of marquee text and then, you know, everyone will love this.
The marquee text. I mean, I think VisiCalc, right? Like the spreadsheets were one of the big drivers of like the original kind of round of Apple and PC adoption, right? Like they're, you do need some sort of killer app to sell this sort of thing. I just think there's so many problems with VR that that AR seems to me like that's what's going to win this fight long term. And
it's definitely more appealing. I mean, to me, I don't want to.
Well, look at the, look
I don't
want
to have this ridiculous.
Well, yeah, you look stupider.
You look stupider.
Yeah,
right?
But I think you look at some of the criticisms that women in the tech community have applied to have VR, right? Like they basically don't want to have their face covered, right? And rightly or wrongly are worried about getting groped or whatever. Like they don't, they want, it's
I hadn't even thought of that.
No, it's a, but it's,
but
it's,
sure,
it's, this is not my idea, I guess is my point.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it's not something I even thought of.
Well, yeah, because you're a man. But no,
that's right. I didn't. Yeah.
But yeah, this is something I've seen in a number of places from kind of women in the game community and in software, right? Just like, It they don't want to have their eyes covered while they're playing a game. Mm-hmm. And it's this social thing that is super unfortunate, but it's a real thing that I think will inhibit VR. Plus it's like innately like single player isolating.
Well, not necessarily, right?
So let me say that differently. You could play a really cool AR game on this table with six people, whereas it's going to be harder to play a really cool AR game in this house with six people, right? Because you're going to accidentally punch each other.
You said harder.
So, VR. I said backwards. Yeah. I mean, just playing virtual ping pong or something with six people on a table. Like it seems like we are like kind of recognizing the unhealthiness of isolation these days. And I still want a VR headset. I just think it's going to be a gimmick.
Yeah. Gimmick's the right word. That's what I was talking about. Like when the internet first came out, like 92, whatever, like when you could get it in college or when I got in college, it wasn't even a gimmick yet. I mean, it was like, here, go for some site.
It
was ridiculous. Right. I mean, Telnet. I mean, yeah.
Well, it appeals to people that like build their own cars or something, right? Like that yeah, like that the technical level of footsing. Or
I love the fact that there was a Barnes & Noble at the time. I remember distinctly, like 92, 93, and there was a book, and it was like the Internet Directory.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's just great.
That's what Yahoo was for a long time, right?
Like, but the fact that somebody printed it.
Oh no!
It's just great.
It's
like, let me go spend $18.95.
It's funny now.
On a book. It is funny now.
But someone got paid
for
that.
But I paged through it. I didn't buy that book, but I paged through it, right? Because I was like,
I remember it, yeah.
Oh, this is a way to discover thing. I mean, there was no way to discover stuff.
There was no Google. Yeah.
No.
No Ask Jeeves.
No. Ask Jeeves. Good idea, Ask Jeeves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the marketing concept there. I mean, if you were to say, which search engine is a better marketing idea? Something called Google,
right?
Or something called Ask Jeeves?
We could name it after a mathematical term or a butler.
That we ask.
Now ask.com, right? Like,
I think Ask Jeeves is better.
I agree. But can you imagine like a D&D or a miniatures campaign on a table with six people doing AR? That would be amazing.
Well, so now, I mean, that's an interesting topic because that's getting there, right? I mean, people play role-playing games, D&D, et cetera, through things like Roll20 and sites like that where, you know, they all get on Skype, they have Roll20, and it's like they're all there. I'm not saying this is AR.
I don't know what Roll20 is.
Oh, Roll20 is a system. It's software. It's software that everybody has, where they can basically see if we were all, instead of us all sitting at the table and like putting our little figures on a map. And
oh, okay.
So it's that whole part, right? And so it handles, you basically are like, roll a d20, right? And it...
You
see the map, you see the dice being rolled.
Oh, nice.
Right? You have all that stuff. The person, the DM or whoever, the game master, whoever's running it can handle like the fog of war things where it's all sort of
right
pre-prepped. And then they can be like, oh, show this. Right? So it's somebody running that. And I mean, that's how a lot of... I mean, there's whole video cast, podcast, whatever of people like, you know, like Twitch TV, you know,
right.
But that, but not Twitch where they're playing a video game, but where you have Vin Diesel or whoever, you know, people who are like famous people playing role-playing games and other people watching them play role-playing games. And they're all like have their Skype headsets on. I mean, this sounds like if you've never seen this or not interested in this, it sounds like the worst thing possible.
I'm wondering if Vin Diesel's a cleric. That's what I've been wondering for a month or seconds. But, no, I understand. It's the same reason why Twitch is interesting, right? And it's the same thing reason why
you're watching people do things that you like to do. It's like why kids watch Minecraft videos.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't seen the South Park episode about this, I heartily recommend it.
Oh, I should. I haven't seen it.
There is a it's a number of years ago, but there's a South Park episode basically where they start out making fun of PewDiePie and how this is like a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hilarious. But I like co-op video games. Like, so
couch co-op.
I like couch co-op video games and they're really hard to freaking find.
They are. They're... We should play, did I tell you about that one? We should play it if you like couch co-op.
What's that?
Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time.
You think the name's long enough?
That's a ridiculous name.
I gotta wait a minute. I have to write this down. Let me get my special pen for writing long things. Lovers in a danger.
So you're
space time.
Yeah.
Good lord.
So 1 to 4 players are co-piloting this ship, which is like a cross section of a ship. So like, say one person is like saying where it goes and another person is like going up to the gun that shoots up top, or one person's right. moving the shield around. You're all like moving around, climbing ladders to get in different rooms of the ship to do stuff to try and go rescue bunnies off of like asteroids and stuff.
So you're in the Millennium Falcon and somebody has to run up to one gun, somebody has to run down for another gun, someone has to keep Chewie from crashing the thing.
Yeah, it's like that.
Okay, except there are bunnies on asteroids that you're trying to
Yeah, if you like couch co-op, you should totally come over and we should play
okay.
If you like couch co-op. I love couch co-op.
This is an Xbox game?
It's a general indie game. It's probably on PS4 too.
Okay.
It's like probably a multi-platform indie game. Yeah. I mean, it was like a $10 or $15.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Certainly challenging because it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time, right? It's like somebody has to move and you're like, oh, you go up here and shoot the thing up top.
And you're yelling at each other. No, no.
Yeah,
no.
So it's
great.
It's pretty fun. But you were saying about co-op.
No, so I like couch co-op. And you know, we've played a bunch of tabletop kind of co-op games. And I think it's just, I'm really excited for the future of kind of tabletop gaming integrated with technology. Like, I think
it's coming already.
Yeah, no, I
have
think
you seen it yet?
I've seen like some of the iPad setups and that sort of thing. But I think 5 years from now, it's going to be amazing. Like,
yeah. So the only one I've played is Mansions of Madness.
Oh yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, so it's the only one I've played, which is you know, it's an Arkham themed game. You're moving around in a mansion,
right?
Surprise! Well, it's the typical Arkham style tropes of what you would see in a game like that. So it's all of those things. I didn't tell you about this, except the iPad. You know, we'd set it on the table here. We'd have the whole game board here, and then what would happen is it would tell us like how to set up the map. You know, because it has the modular map, and it would be like put a search token here and put a monster here and whatever. And then what would happen is, say I wanted to go over and search the desk or something, right? So I would do that on our board here between us, and then on the iPad I would touch that search thing, and it would tell us, and it has the mood music, and it's kind of telling you that story, and it's so much more immersive than, you know, reading off of this little Fantasy Flight card, which is in like, you know, 5-point font.
Right.
You
get tired of reading about halfway through, and
yeah, and it's really cool the way that they've done that. I mean, there's other obvious advantages that they can can monetize it by providing subscription content, right? I mean, it's great for them because what they can do is rather than putting a PDF behind a paywall, right, they can that people share on, you know, some file sharing site or whatever that everyone gets, they go and make it downloadable content in an app. So it's like $2 for another scenario. And it's like, sure.
And
it's easy because they've given you modular pieces to this game. You can, you know, connect them this way. You know how those games work. So they've done that. They've even done it retroactively. So Mansions of Madness was created with this in mind. Like from the ground up, they created this game to work with the iPad. Like that's how it's done. There's no cards that drive the story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so they did that. But they've also, Fantasy Flight has also done this to other games like Descent, which we've played before. Mm. So what they've done there is, you know how in Descent, like one person has to kind of run the monsters and all the other people play?
Yeah.
They've come out with an app to retroactively work with that game where all the players can play and it drives it and tells you what to do. And you basically just tell the app like what physical components, like what things you've bought from the store, and then it uses those in terms of, so it doesn't, you know, tell you to put a monster you don't have or whatever.
Right. So you don't, you also.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Somebody doesn't have to be bored being the DM either.
Exactly.
Right?
So that's just the start of where some of that stuff's happening. There's,
but it's physical.
There's more of it's happening. It's still physical, but yeah, more of it's happening.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think it's exciting, right? To take it back to like being embodied in the world. Like tabletop gaming has had, I feel like it's had kind of a renaissance in the last,
I would
what,
say kind of, it
decade.
Absolutely
has. absolutely
has.
And, you know, video gaming has become this kind of immense industry. And then we have these kind of edge casey things where people are doing this, what you said, Roll 20, is that what you call it?
That's one particular software in order to basically play a D&D or other role playing games remotely. Yeah.
Yeah. But it kind of like incentivizes you to not be in the same space in ways like doing this whole thing over Skype. Right.
What it does is it provides you the opportunity. So, I mean, I think playing role playing games with people in person is a great time. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
It takes a lot of prep by one person or whoever is running the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a commitment. In order to do that, because you're really responsible for everyone you feel responsible for everyone's good time, right?
Yeah, to run a game. I mean, I think you are responsible for everyone's good time. I mean,
yeah, no, you are for sure. But what they've been able to do with some of the, by making parts of it digital. So part of it being digital is cool just because your friend can move away and you can still play. So
right.
That part's cool. But the other part of it that's really neat is that people can produce those digital products that make the setup time for you less.
Yeah.
Which is great.
They reduce the friction for playing.
They reduce the friction playing for playing. The game. Right. Because they're like, oh, you know, here's, I will basically prepackage this whole adventure and have all these things so that you don't have to go and, you know, do it yourself. Because obviously, if you're going to make up your own world and that type of thing, it's going to be a lot of work. Right. I mean, probably more than just on paper in person, because it's not easy, but. If you're playing with people at the table and people are like, oh, let's go into that house over there, and you have no idea. I mean, if you're a good DM or whatever, you'll make something up. I mean, you'll figure out, and you can just do that. You don't have to have like a digital asset for it.
Right.
You could just draw on the whiteboard or draw on the map, and you know. So there's different aspects to it. I've never done the Roll 20 style thing. I would certainly do it if there was like a game going that was, you know, good folks and whatnot, just
right.
to try it.
And historically, like you had been playing and moved apart or something, right? But my thought though is it's exciting to me to see video gaming get into the physical world in the desktop or tabletop sort of way. Like I think that I it seems to me that's going to be awesome.
So what would you like to see? To like paint a picture of what you think would be
a good outcome.
I think
what you're talking about with the iPad is fine. But I think
the Mantis thing, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's great in that it's solving problems, but I think, you know, the AR version of that where like you all have your glasses on and then everything is set up on the table and you can kind of physically interact with something that's not really there.
They're doing more of that with like the cameras as well.
Yeah,
they're doing more of that too.
Yeah. So if you're looking at the iPad, you can see something, right? But
the battle happens on the iPad. Or right. It handles the fiddly math, right? Yeah. You're not rolling 8,000 dice.
Yeah, but like we have lots of open world games in the
video games.
In the video
like
game
Skyrim. Community.
Yeah, yeah. Of, yeah lots sure. of things where you can go into any house and do whatever you want, right? So I think when those things kind of combine into tabletop gaming, I think it's going to be really interesting to see that kind of social embodied gaming that we don't have as much with video gaming right now. Like you get you
a lot of on rails.
Well, you get a lot of couch co-op. Sorry, you get almost no couch co-op. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of kind of online deathmatchy things.
Right.
But there's not a lot of kind of co-op things, and there's not a lot of being able to play it together in the same space. Like it's really hard to make that happen.
Right. I mean, there's like kind of the traditional LAN party type of thing where everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that. I used to play like Halo 2, Halo 3 online a lot, but not by myself.
Right.
Right. So that was like build a friends list of other adult guys, whatever, and then form up teams, right? And you play a lot of 4-on-4, 6-on-6 type stuff. And I mean, that was fun. I haven't done it in 10 years. But I mean, it was a good time, and it was certainly a camaraderie thing,
right? Yeah,
you know. And then you'd have your forums, and you'd get to know each other a little bit through that, and you know, you became kind of like virtual friends. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But seeing that land on the tabletop really really excites me, right? Like getting that to the physical to the physical world.
So I'm still trying to understand, like, beyond kind of what I described, what would be a cool aspect of a co-op experience that, like, say, the four of us would play that
sure.
on a table with a digital component that you think would be really great?
I mean, I think what you described is fantastic in and of itself, but I mean, I think just four people in AR at a table with no game set up, right? Where you sit down at the table, you say mm-hmm. start, you're essentially starting a video game, but you're starting a tabletop game, right? So it
like
could
it's
be
built
like,
into the table. Is that what
no,
about?
No, oh. just you have your AR glasses
oh,
on.
Oh, I see.
It just puts the board out for I you see. And say, "I want to move this piece to there," I right? See. And then the game set. So there's downsides. Like people like to punch out their cardboard, right? Like it's a very satisfying thing to.
I would be perfectly fine with having more games and not needing more storage space. Trust me, that would be great.
And not bend things up, right? But that would be cool, right? And then when you have a question, you're like, can I move there, right? Like the game could be like, no, dummy, you don't understand the rules, right? Mm-hmm. Like, whereas, and I think that's like a fun piece of the game too, right? I think you enjoy kind of teasing out what the rules are in a lot of ways, but maybe
less
not.
Than you think.
Maybe not. Maybe you're skilled at it, but you don't enjoy it.
I would much rather enjoy the game than be the rules jockey.
Be the guy, yes, the heavy.
It's never fun
to be the heavy.
I mean, that's my role, but I don't. That's not why gaming is fun.
Yeah.
It's just somebody needs to do it.
Okay, so it's a skill you have, and you take it on, even though it's maybe not particularly.
I just feel like it's my job.
You don't suffer through it. You don't.
No, I don't suffer through it. But I feel like it's my role, and I'm probably going to be the most efficient at it.
Yeah, but that's not a thing with video games, right? Like video games, you might need to do some upfront reading about how to play the game, right? Maybe, right?
But I don't want to play that game.
What? Well, you have to do the upfront reading?
Yeah.
Well, so what I'm saying is when that converges with tabletop gaming, right, you get the fun and physicality of being in the same place with people, like moving physical things around, whether they're really on the table or not, kind of doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But you also get the video game aspect of the game tells you when you're like, you can't make that move, right? Like, oh, I'm doing it wrong. And so some of the unfunness of tabletop gaming, which is the teasing out of how it works and arguing over no, you gotta go two moves back because that thing that we did, that's not right. Like that's just not possible with video games, right? Like they constrain you.
Right.
Or if they're built properly, they do.
True.
Some of the Lego games have problems. But which I love. They're great. But there's so much opportunity there to take out the friction, right, that we're talking before. in tabletop gaming by using software, right? Like, so it's not just the DMs, but it's also like all these kind of complicated rules that are, you kind of intuitively learn through video games. And we, I guess we, like the video game community has learned how to make tutorials and stuff to get people through like learning a game. Whereas like reading,
it's mandatory to have a tutorial in the game. Like you can't be old school anymore.
There are certain pretentious games which will go unnamed that do not have, that you just die constantly and are punished. But but those aren't for me. But you know, reducing the friction of learning the game, making it fun to go through, oh, everyone's doing their tutorial to go through the game and no one actually has to kind of do this upfront research to kind of prep. I think it'll help tabletop gaming at some point in a way. And to a certain extent, like it's kind of a new thing, right? Like it's the synergy of tabletop and video games, but it's social and physical in a way that so video games rarely are.
Yeah, but are you saying it would be a good thing to have a tabletop game where there doesn't need to be the guy or the woman that figures out the rules? Would that be a good thing?
I think it's like any other thing. Like
I think that would be good, because for instance, like when I went to BGG Con, right, his gaming convention, they have actual flags with like bases that, because you can go and get a game out of the library, like 3,000 games,
right,
whatever the heck you want,
right,
but they have these flags that you can like put on your table of like, need someone to teach us how to play,
right
because some of the games, yeah, you can learn it in 10 minutes, but some games like need an hour just to, right? And you would do that sort of thing, like normally, like if you're not at a gaming convention, you would buy the game, you'd, instead of watching the TV or something one night, you'd pull out the rules if you're the sort that's inclined to do that like me, and you'd just learn how to play the game, and then you'd be like, okay, I'm now ready to teach everyone how to play the game. But when you go to a convention, you haven't done that, and you pull something off the shelf, it'd be much easier if someone just stops by and does that, right? So I guess what I'm saying is I would see it as a great good to have something like a digital assistant, right, that just...
Yeah.
Made that happen. That
yeah.
Was awesome.
No, I think what we said earlier about the reducing the friction of being the DM, right? Some people want to be the DM, and I'm sure there's somebody who wants to be like the rules guardian, right? But I think 99% of people would rather start playing the game.
Those are two really different things, though. I just want to...
No, I know they are two different things. But they're two things that also make it harder to run a game, right?
Sure.
Like, so someone has to learn the damn rules and help everyone learn the game. And if you're playing an RPG where you need a DM, you don't have to do work ahead of time, but you probably should do some work ahead of time to kind of figure out what the general pieces of the scenario
Unless you're really gifted at that,
right.
You need to do work ahead
Which
of time.
Which is most
people. Most people are not gifted enough to just run an RPG like off by the seat of their pants. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, no,
and for everyone to have a good time.
Yeah, exactly. So I what I'm saying is, those are two pieces of friction that make it harder to sell tabletop games and harder for people to participate in tabletop games.
I was just thinking while you were talking about what would be really cool with AR would be, could you imagine Time Stories?
Oh, my God.
Right? Because you could punch Bob in the face.
Yeah. You're just like, oh, yeah, Bob. I think bad things would happen to you if you punched Bob in the face. You could
think about how
time.
Cool that would be, though.
Yeah.
Like that would be a perfect game for that type of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because the parts of that game that I don't like... are the fiddliness. It's the part where it reminds me that I'm playing a game.
Right, where we're like, wait a minute, we have to move this thing here, and then like...
To me, that's the weakest part of the whole system.
Well, yeah, so that's why things like Arkham are fun, but then you realize that you haven't been, like, decreasing one of the 25 counters, right, because this other thing happened, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the 75 new rules that came into play during the first 10 minutes of the game, I haven't been accounting for all of them, right?
Right.
Where video game, like, a computer will tell you, because they're really good at following rules.
Because all of the things that we've been talking about, whether they're video games or role-playing games or tabletop games,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but for me, a huge part of it is immersion and forgetting, in like when the mechanics just become part of what you're doing and not this separate thing from the game.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's that immersion level, right? That really is what it makes any of those sorts of games successful for me.
But I think that's what having an AR kind of driven tabletop game would get you.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
I'm not. Yeah, I'm
so,
agreeing with you. Yeah.
anyway, I'm excited for that kind of piece of the future, because I think it looks, I'm looking for things that are happy in the future, but I think it's going to be cool in a way that VR is just kind of like, it's kind of not like, I just don't see
it. That would be something really interesting to work on. That, I mean, that I hadn't even really thought of that before, but what sorts of things in terms of ideas that you could do with that and what that would look like. There could be some really interesting products there.
Yeah, no, I think sure. So. I think that's one of the problems with VR, actually, is that people don't know the medium yet because it's so new. They don't know what kind of games to make.
That, like, little crazy hologram chess in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Except, yeah, well, like you little hitting other hologram critters with your stone axe and braining them. But
if I had a hologram chess set, you would play.
I would.
There you go.
I just don't know how many times I would play. but one of the problems that VR has, right, is people don't know what kind of games to make, right? Like it, and I think AR is going to have this, and it's any new medium, right? Like you have to kind of discover what makes a good game or a good film or whatever. And
right. That's what I said. Like when the first thing I discovered personally on the internet was ASCII backgammon, right? I mean, that was not the most compelling thing.
I feel like finding a board game on the internet is the first thing you discovered is maybe specific to you, but I'm sure there's someone else that did the same thing.
You know what it's called?
ASCII gammon?
No, it was called FIBS, First Internet Backgammon Server.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow. If only I would have had an internet connection when I was younger, I could have made so many more awesome things. Like that, more ASCII art driven video games like I made when I was 10. So anyway, I think it's neat to bring us back to physicality, right?
I think a lot of what we talked about today was about physical experiences. I think that's in general something we could continue to talk about, because I think it's an interesting topic. There's a lot of aspects to
wait a minute there's a lot of aspects to physical reality. Is that what you're trying to say?
Sorry, there's a lot of aspects to the discussion.
I mean
there's a lot to, because we talked about physical experiences, like vis-a-vis social media, and then also vis-a-vis gaming.
Oh, you started to say vis-a-vis.
Well, isn't that an appropriate use of that term?
It is.
Okay, sorry. What word should I've used?
I don't know.
With respect to
it gives me hives sometimes.
Okay, I won't use it anymore.
But yeah, with regard to gaming and
with
that
regard
sort of,
to, okay, I'll use that.
Vis-a-vis.
But I think that more of those types of experiences are what make me happy. Like right now, the thing I'm most looking forward to, like this month, is we're going camping in Carlsbad.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the month. I'm like really looking forward to that because it's a pure physical experience.
Yeah.
Right? And like that's... I'm like, man, I can't wait until we, you know, I'm not really looking forward to the drive down there or whatever, but I'm really looking forward to just like, oh, this is a pure physical experience. This is a pure social experience. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just talking with people. We're hanging out. We're making food. We're walking around, you know, and to me, that's just a really good time.
Walking around with people and making fire. So yeah, you don't get more fundamental to the human experience than that.
It's a good time, you know, but that's what I'm, that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to the iOS conference I'm going to right after that.
At
the end of the month. Totally different type of thing, but
maybe they'll announce AR for the iPhone then.
No, it was kind of cool. I got I got a little bit more involved with it. I did mention this.
That you're participating. So how are you participating again?
So two ways. One, just being part of a focus group, whatever. That'll happen there.
Right.
That's not that big of a deal. But I volunteered to help. One of the nights they're doing like a trivia game show. So I volunteered to come up with some categories and I wrote some questions. So I wrote questions for a couple categories for this thing. And, you know, like it was like, will this compile? Right. So I wrote a but it was a fun, I don't know, it was a cool experience. And just to contribute, right, is a positive thing.
Yeah, no, it's good.
It's a positive thing, just to contribute in some way.
You should have the Will It Blend episode with an iPhone ready for whenever people get the questions wrong. You just see,
that's a good idea.
No one answered this right. iPhone goes in the blender.
It's harder than you think, though, to come up with tricky things that compile that someone might be confused whether they do or not.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to come up with things that don't.
Right.
But it's hard, actually, to come up with things that do, but aren't obvious. I don't know if I'm communicating.
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's hard to find things that compile but look like they should not.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, also not what you're trained to do, right? Like, you're not trained. Hey, you know what we should do? Something that looks like it won't even freaking compile. Right. That's what we should do.
Right. So that was a little tricky to find, but I feel like I found at least one of that. But that was harder than I thought it would be. I was like, I have to come up with some that actually do rather than all ones that don't. So that was good. And I, the main reason I wanted to do that, I mean, I will just admit my primary motive was just so that I would have some social instinct going on my own.
Right.
It gives me some like, oh, hey, you worked on that too. And it gives me some connection because a lot of people go to these things with people from their work or they all already contribute there. So
were you with me at the ABI strategy conference? Did we go together to that?
No.
So there was a talk given, and now I'm going to blank on her name, but given by somebody. She had been like a Google dev evangelist and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But one of her, she talks about being a shy person and how she doesn't like conferences because she's not very outgoing. And she's like, what you should do is you should present at the conference because then everyone wants to talk to you and you don't have to have a reason to go talk to other people.
Right.
I thought it was purely genius.
Yeah.
So you've kind of hacked that in a subtle way.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. And then at this iOS meetup, I didn't want to do it this month. I didn't want to present, but I figured I would do it in April. I'll present on a topic there. And then I'll probably also have some topic from this conference that might be interesting to chat about with people, because they asked me if I wanted to this month, and I was like, no, I got this product launch. I'm kind of busy. It's just not a great month,
right? But you're gonna come back from this bigger conference.
But I'll come back for this other thing, and I'll have some more stuff to talk about, and we'll see how it goes. I'm not necessarily sure what my motive is for being involved with that. Like, you know, we'll just see how it goes. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like any other meetup, right?
Yeah.
Like
right. Yeah, we know how that goes.
It'll either go great or people will start screaming about Meteor and you'll run away.
Yes.
So we need a sign off. We still don't have a sign off. We need some sort of sign off. So we could both scream Meteor, which seems totally wrong.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that. we don't have a sign off. I think we'll just have to
Just trickle off.
See what happens. We'll just talk next time.
We'll talk next time. All right. Done. Context Free is a contrarian content production. Find out more information at contextfree.fm along with our show notes. Our theme music is Chocolate and Cocaine by Lorenzo's Music. Find out more about Lorenzo's Music at lorenzosmusic.com.